the education sector is experiencing sort of a renaissance in the way that it's thinking about these non-college pathways. And so we have an opportunity to really challenge some of those prior assumptions about what it looks like.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable healthcare.
In this episode, Business Forward and the Walton Family Foundation hosted a discussion on innovation in education and workforce development. In this conversation with Business Forward Executive Director Liz Fairchild, a panel of employers and leading innovators in education explored the role of education in connecting learners with in-demand skills, best practices for career-connected learning, and how business leaders can support career pathways in their own communities. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hello, everyone. I'm Liz Fairchild, Executive Director of Business Forward. Today, we are pleased to co-host a panel with the Walton Family Foundation. We'd also like to thank the many educators and employers for joining us today and inviting their networks as well. So with that, thank you all again for joining us. Let's start with brief introductions. Aaron, I'm going to hand it over to you first.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. Hi, everybody. I'm Aaron. I'm the director of Uncommon Construction. We're a nonprofit in New Orleans that hosts an apprenticeship program for high school students. So we take young people from different schools around the city, plus a homeschool population. They get paid as W-2 employees. They get internship credit at school for building a house together. And then any revenue that we make from that house is used to match their earnings with what we call an equity awards scholarship for further education or career opportunities. I'll pass it over to Ting Ting for the next intro.
Thank you, Aaron. Hi, everyone. My name is Ting Ting Chen. I'm a founder of Coded Spectrum, which is a very new and small nonprofit organization in Southern California. What we're trying to do is to build education and career pathways for people with neurodivergent conditions, especially for those with autism spectrum disorders. And we're especially connecting students with grades 13 and 14 with career opportunities in both local small businesses and big companies. Thank you. And next is Stefan.
Thanks, Ting Ting. Hi, my name is Stefan Leeds. I am the Chief Development Officer at Radius, and we are in the business of building career pathways. So have been working for a couple of years in Charlotte, North Carolina, around helping high school students and early entrants into the workforce start to identify the training and employment opportunities that best suit them and that are available and that are in demand in Charlotte and beyond with the economy that continues to evolve. Today, we're really focusing on our partnership with NASCAR, who's been an amazing partner with us working to create career-connected learning experiences in partnership with Charlotte Mecklenburg School, the school district in Charlotte. So I will pass it over to Pete.
Great, thank you. Great to be here with everyone. Pete Jung, I am the Chief Marketing Officer for NASCAR. I oversee our Charlotte office, and we've had the really good fortune of working with Stefan and the Radius Learning team for the past year plus. And really, it's sort of an opportunity that you know we saw. And sort of, you know, commitment to the community to really provide, you know, exposure to the litany of careers that are, you know, part of motorsports and NASCAR specifically, certainly partially our company, but also the industry, you know, at large. So it's been a great opportunity to get in front of students at a younger age and not waiting until college, you know, for other programs like our internship program. So great to be here with everyone.
Thank you all so much. We have clearly a wide range of perspectives on today's panel, so I'm excited to get into it. So my first question is, why are we talking today? Why is this moment particularly ripe for reimagining the connections between K-12, college, and career? Whoever would like to take that first.
I could jump in. I mean, I'll take the easy one, right? I mean, we're all kind of in the wake of COVID-19, and that's caused a ton of change, right? We've seen that there is a recognition that's really widespread that we need resilient systems, and those needs have always been there. But with COVID has come this centrality almost of virtual solutions that have popped up. And I think it's exciting, you know, I mean, it's about the next generation and how they work, but it's also about how we can solve these solutions at scale. And virtual gives us an opportunity to create innovations that can be adapted, but can start to tackle big problems that we're facing as a society.
I'll chime in. So I think that definitely resonates with us at Uncommon, the idea you know, that the construction industry and its various sectors was deemed essential at the beginning of the pandemic. And so in this current moment, when schools and businesses were closing or unable to engage their students or stakeholders in really meaningful ways, there were obviously first responders, healthcare practitioners who were putting society on their back, but you also had a whole lot of much needed infrastructure improvements that happened during that time and kept people working. Construction industry is the backbone of the American economy. We have an aging infrastructure and we've had a decades long marketing campaign against non-college pathways, against jobs and careers that start on or around a construction site where you might get dirty in the process, where there's access to high wage in-demand jobs that may or may not require a four-year degree. The education sector is experiencing sort of a renaissance in the way that it's thinking about these non-college pathways. And so we have an opportunity to really challenge some of those prior assumptions about what it looks like, what it means to be a student who's following one of those pathways, how we value those experiences and measure success and so on, because they're sort of like an open source book right now to explore and experiment and find new ways of doing it that work in the 21st century.
Ting Ting or Pete, anything you'd like to chime in there?
Yes, thank you. I think I can talk a little bit about tech industry and IT positions in all different industries. So as everyone knows, with the development of technology, there are more and more different type of jobs emerging right now, especially, for example, with artificial intelligence. There are new positions such like for data labeling and all of the new things that's never existed before. And it's actually required us to re-examine the education system from K-12 level to college level as a whole, and to better prepare the workforce pipelines with multiple possible paths, which, you know, traditionally is not there. So that's why I think it's really an important timing at this moment to talk about this issue.
And I'd love to just chime in really quickly, because a lot of our work, we're spanning different sectors. And I think here with Erin, with Ting Ting, you're seeing how there's a moment that's happening in each of these sectors. And so for the businesses watching, right, I think it's worth even highlighting that across sectors, there's these trends have led to it being a really exciting moment, regardless of sector. The big thing I wanted to call out was with recovery, with this time, there's this moment of also there is more money out there than ever before that is chasing innovation, workforce development, new ways of doing things. The recovery and relief dollars have created tens of billions of dollars that are spanning different sectors. And we're seeing, I think I love the word renaissance, Erin, right? Like we're seeing across different sectors, wherever your perspective or lens is looking at this from as a business, you're seeing that there is a chance here to dive in and to receive financial support, buy-in from education institutions. Really, it's a ripe ground for public-private partnership and reimagining how we work together to start cracking some of these big challenges across sectors or within them.
That's a good point. Like I think like part of that renaissance is also a reconstruction of some of the systems that have been in place as well. So we know many of these systems are not equitable, whether it's in, you know, the school system or access to resources or business opportunities or whatever it may be. And so we're also in a moment culturally where we can challenge some of those conceptions, some of those practices that may have given advantage to one group over another. And so I think like all those things coming together, there is this really unique convergence and Ting Ting, like these like 21st century technology based solutions as well, like also rely on and require improvements to the built environment for, you know, to sustain and support them, right? So yeah, I think we're at like just a really interesting intersection culturally, economically, as we're also holding a mirror up to ourselves as a country around what our priorities are. It's a really neat evolution to be at.
I love this kind of notion of renaissance, you know, and it's a little bit kind of, you know, personal or maybe specific to the industry that I work in, company that I'm at, sport I represent. And we call it sort of maybe reference it more as transformation, but I love the idea of renaissance. And really the past couple of years, for a number of reasons, I think as an industry, as a company, a leadership group, we've really tried to step up our game to make sure that NASCAR as a sport is really inclusive and welcoming for all, whether that's a fan or an employer or a competitor or a sponsor. Really trying to do a lot more, you know, in support of equity and justice. So the timing of, you know, the introduction with Radius Learning was phenomenal, because it starts, in our opinion, in the communities where we race, where we have offices, where we have tracks and all that. So
my 2 seconds on it would just be, you know, and thinking about what's most important for businesses, like I keep coming back to showing up for the moment. And I just wanted to give big kudos to NASCAR, who's really, really shown up in a big way. And I know we'll go deeper into what that means and how that can look today. But I think that showing up and like putting your best foot forward and being there for the community, being there for the populations that you're trying to really connect with and serve, like NASCAR has certainly done it. And I think that's the biggest, that openness, right? That leaning in is really where it all starts and what creates the opportunity for collaboration, but for impact and change.
I'm excited to get into that in a little bit. You already have addressed some of the questions, which is perfect. We can just get deeper into the details. So I want to go back to something Aaron brought up, which was the systems around us. So let's talk about school systems. Some of you have mentioned K-12 already. In your experience, how does career-directed learning address those inequities? So Aaron got a chance to kind of tee this up for us. So I'd love to include Peter Ting first on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we're trying to do in partnership again with Radius, not to harp on that, is work with them on curriculum and forums and activities to kind of expose students at a younger age to the different kind of careers and people, and really see it as kind of a networking, inspirational sort of opportunity. So I think it's all very complementary kind of, you know, curriculum and experience. And I think we're constantly sort of pushing ourselves, like, you know, what type of exposure or experience for these students is going to be meaningful. We're really not trying to, you know, brainwash them around kind of NASCAR, you know, the sport, but really the careers around it. And it's anything from engineering to being, you know, a lawyer to, you know, a marketing agency to, you know, finance and all that. So just trying to find ways to make that kind of interesting and compelling and provide kind of nurturing, I think, exposure into the potential careers in just one industry in this part of the country.
And Ting Ting, you're working with neurodivergent populations. So how do you see that playing out in school systems right now?
So I actually have another title, which is professor of computer science in a four-year university. So I can talk a little bit more about, you know, the mission into college with a CS major. And that's very competitive now. And that's not only our school, it's everywhere in the country. I mean, the whole globe. And if we only use GPA as the only criteria for admission, then there are for sure less and less students with disability, including autism spectrum disorders, to be admitted into college to study computer science or other related majors, that's for sure. With career-connected learning, like students with ASD or other neurodivergent conditions don't have to have close to 4.0 high school GPAs to study these subjects and maybe eventually landing a IT position or, you know, in a tech industry or other industries. So that's really addressing inequities in today's school system. Yeah, so that's my observation every day, and really hope that we can change that.
Thank you, Stefan or Aaron.
Well, you know, we think that systemic issues of race, power, and privilege are embedded in the way that we think about, talk about, and promote opportunities in our industry. There's a certain profile of student that's presented with a non-college option, and a certain profile of student that's presented with a college option. When I was graduating high school, it was never a question of whether or not I was going to go to college, but where. My dad's a doctor, my mom's a teacher, my brother's a journalist. Everyone except me has postgraduate degrees. The idea that I might take a job on or around a construction site one day was like the furthest thing from everyone's assumption. In my third year at college, I dropped out and, you know, subsequently responded to Hurricane Katrina with the Red Cross and got real involved in their relief and rebuilding effort here in New Orleans, and fell in love with a day on a job site. There's more math, reading, science, engineering, social skills required in that space than most professions experience all year. And I was getting paid really good money to do it. You know, that was my experience, right? And I was able to be successful, I think, in large part because of the zip code I grew up in, the access and privilege that I grew up with, the fact that when I did drop out of college, I did so debt-free, which is not the experience of a majority of people in our country. And then when I went back to school and got my degree and became a classroom teacher through Teach for America, you hold up my experience with the experience of the students and young people that I was then starting to work with. Had engaged with along the way. And the traditional education system didn't work for me. And the one that I was trying to create or revise in my classroom as a middle school reading and social studies teacher wasn't working for the students that I was attempting to teach. And so at Uncommon, we're thinking about how can we have a different relationship with the walls of those classrooms? And we do, we try to, because our kids build and own it together, right? Making your education much more participatory, creating alternative learning environments with lower barriers and more applicable, transferable skills that are being utilized, where we can just put classroom content in context. So we think about this sort of like as deeply embedded in a lot of the experiences of our young people, making sure that your education has a clear return on investment from what you're putting into it as well. Understanding that you don't have to have it figured out from the time you're a sophomore in high school. We're not trying to track young people into their forever jobs and careers, just trying to broaden their level of exposure and activating some of these spaces so that their excitement, enthusiasm, curiosity can drive their learning. So that when it is time to decide what pathway you're gonna go on, they can make that choice independently.
Thanks, Aaron. Tavon?
I think everyone really covered it. My two quick notes, right? One is, the centrality of the mix of work and education, that is something you're hearing in all the answers. And I think even more so when we talk about the school systems and solving for inequity, it's really cool to see the alignment behind work and education from all the stakeholders, from the employers, from the school systems, from those trying to create opportunity for those who didn't have it before. And when I hear about Ting Ting's work, right, it makes me think about how technology both at the same time can create new pathways for new populations to jobs. And at the same time, when I hear Aaron talking, I'm sitting there hearing about how also technology can be a tool for finding your pathway, right? Kind of both creating new pathways and a way of individualizing education so that you're figuring out, if I do this, how can I go into this, right? How are my skills permeable? How are my experiences stackable? How do we open doors as we go through that mix of education and work experience? I think that's always the never ending, I think the thing you continue to iterate on is because the ground is like the economy and the ground is moving under our feet. But when we talk about those resilient systems, being able to change what the pathways are and help folks navigate what's already out there, it's one of those places where I see systems getting smarter and more resilient and more efficient as well.
Thank you. So we have a lot of employers listening in on today's conversation. I want to make sure at the top, we give them almost like a CTA on what they can do to get involved. So I'm going to go around the room really quickly. What advice, what's one big thing that you would offer to an employer who wants to get involved, who doesn't know how to start? Pete, let's start with you.
I think Stefan said it well, like just show up, right? I think employers have a platform, right? Their companies, their employees, in many cases, their brands, their offices, and they're all invaluable assets, right? That could have a huge contribution. So I just say show up and be committed to being kind of stewards of students in this time of their education.
Aaron, want to go next?
Yeah, I mean, I was immediately went to that, show up. And I think the next step is collaborate with we use the word collaboration. So we have multiple general construction companies that are competing for bids and jobs that come together at the intersection of our program. So, you know, show up, collaborate, participate, understand that, you know, you're perhaps the content area expert, right? But that the learning process might not be the thing that industry is best suited to facilitate. And so showing up and collaborating, I think is really, really important.
I remember that word, collaboration. All right, Stefan and Tingting.
I hope this is okay, Liz. I'm going to ratchet up the ask a little bit. Actually, it's not that I'm ratcheting it up, right? I think more where my head is at is I always am a big fan of saying, hey, right, find your win-win. If you're going to put resources and time into something as a business, that can be purely out of goodwill, right? But I don't think it needs to be purely altruistic, right? I think we work with a variety of businesses, a variety of sizes, and a variety of industries. And what we see is that there are smart business decisions that also include having the workforce and brand that you're going for. And so it varies a lot for businesses, what I've seen. I think if you're a big business with a lot of resources to pour in, right? We've seen folks hire workforce planning directors or talent acquisition directors, right? They're hiring someone whose job it is to not just fill the roles they need filled, but to be intentional about where their talent is coming from. And then I think the second one, right? If you're smaller, you know, find a program that you're excited about. And that's where showing up and collaborating. If you don't have, it almost reminds me of what philanthropy days, they used to talk about time, talent, or treasure. Those are the things that you can contribute, right? And if you're really in the bucket of saying, we can't see an ROI to investing in our workforce, or we don't have the budgets to do it, that's where I think contributing your time and your talents really come into play. And that's where showing up shows up. So find what fits for you and like what that first step you can take is as a business. Because I guarantee you, even the small wins in these, like, they're impacting a handful, if not dozens, if not hundreds of students just by showing up and making work experience part of the education experience.
Tingting, anything to add there?
Yeah, actually, I agree with all the wonderful suggestions. And I think in IT industry or tech industry, the inclusive inclusion and, you know, be more diverse is the trend for sure. And to design and develop more ethical and inclusive technology, we need people with different backgrounds and, you know, just be creative about the solutions that the company can come up with together with people with different backgrounds. I think that's a really important mindset for the employers to have and to be succeed in the future.
Thank you. Now we're going to transition, Pete, I will come back to you, but we're going to transition to the Catalyze Challenge grantees. Tingting, Aaron, and Stefan, these questions are mostly for you. I'm going to kick off with the first one, which is, some of you have covered this in your introduction, but I'd love just a quick reminder of what you set out to address with your solution and what makes your model groundbreaking. So I think we'll go to Aaron first.
Well, yeah, no pressure. What makes the model groundbreaking? So we see Uncommon kind of positioned to resolve four problems as we understand it. You know, the sort of paraphrasing our mission statements, students need more access to real world work-based learning experiences, and their schools are not equipped to provide those. And schools need more opportunities to engage their students in, you know, environments, alternative learning spaces that put their classroom content in context for them. Employers need better and more authentic opportunities to meet a younger and more diverse workforce in order to meet the upcoming jobs needs in our industry sector, the infrastructure needs that we see. And youth and their families need earlier access to social and financial resources, professional resources to kickstart their careers, their jobs and careers, to better bridge a gap between education and employment. We happen to use the residential home construction process. We don't always build a house. We usually build a house because it's the easiest curricular and economic unit of measurement. One of the things that makes our program unique and groundbreaking, in our opinion, is that we've dispensed with the idea of credentials. We don't do an industry-based certification. We don't lean on a textbook credential environment. We don't think there's anything wrong with those. We just know we can't do it better than the existing providers in the industry. The problem is actually earlier than that. It's that we don't have enough young people who are excited and interested raising their hand for all these opportunities. So we think those credentials are great. We think college is great. We also think they can wait for the appropriate time. So we focus a lot more intentionally on the development and demonstration of soft skills in an alternative learning environment that is rich with technical application and technical learning. We know you're going to get the technical skills, learn how to read a tape measure and drive a nail with 100 hours of experience on a job site every semester. We focus a lot more intentionally on performance evaluations for these transferable soft skills through an entirely on-the-job training experience. You're actively building on site on a team of your peers and then engaging in after-school professional development sessions.
Remind me to come back to you about soft skills. That's going to be a question later on. All right, Tingting, I'd love to hear from you.
Yes, I will just keep talking about, you know, IT industry jobs and students with neurodivergent condition. So right now, although many students on the spectrum, they do have strengths in the qualities that usually lead to the career success in IT, they're actually not receiving enough, if any, appropriate technical training to prepare themselves to survive in this digital economy. So currently there are no computer science curriculum available, just customized to the learning needs of students with neurodivergent conditions. And moreover, existing neurodiversity hiring plans in IT companies, they usually require candidates to have undergrad's degree at the minimum to enter that hiring plan, which also most people with ESD don't have. So our Spectrum Career Pathways project allows, you know, high school graduates, grade 13 and 14 on the spectrum to receive hands-on technical training, which is Career Connect connected. The technical training program will be tailored and designed by instructors with experiences in special education, behavioral health, as well as computer science education in, you know, higher education. And actually, we started this a new project earlier this year, and we are now teaching two students and in our pilot courses for web development. And we're receiving really good feedback from students and parents. So in addition to learning programs, we also have professional development programs, which is the annual conference we hosted to connect students directly with employers so that they can demonstrate their technical strengths in front of potential employers. So that's what we do, and we think it's groundbreaking because that's, you know, traditionally not possible with the, you know, traditional education system.
Thanks, Tingting. Stefan, love to hear from you.
Tingting, I just want to say I think it's really amazing work. My fiance was on her way to being a school psychologist, now works more clinically, but I would be remiss if I didn't say how amazing I think it is that you're creating these pathways, and it's something I always get suggested to try and work in more and more hard work. So I guess thank you for the amazing work you're doing. What makes us different, I think, is it's a really different lens. So it's a little bit of a jump from some of the past answers, right? But I would say what we really try to do is be additive to how organizations are doing what they're already doing. And additive, we like to say supercharge, right? How can you supercharge a company or an education system or provider or a public agency's ability to build a great workforce with technology and with collaboration across those stakeholders? And we actually get our inspiration from, I guess, to work with all these different stakeholders, you need to create a win-win. I know I've said that earlier, but really a win-win-win, right? Between the job seeker, the school system, the employer, and the region. And I think the region's kind of a natural beneficiary with great workforce development. So maybe we focus on the job seekers, the education providers, and the employers. And the way we go about trying to create a win-win-win is actually not groundbreaking. It's groundbreaking for the US, but it's actually something that's based in international inspiration. My business partner did a Fulbright studying international systems and based in Sweden and looking at different models. And I, through some domestic education work in DC, would tour top performing education systems. And some places, especially like Switzerland, Germany, right? What they did a really phenomenal job at was what they call demand-driven pathways. They created these workforce pathways, but they started the conversation with where is their demand for talent, right? Where are their jobs going to be for job seekers coming out? So by actually starting with the private sector and saying, where are the opportunities? That's how training providers can orient behind where their graduates are going to be able to go get jobs. And that's how job seekers can navigate their way through these pathways, through training providers that lead to employment. So I think what really makes us groundbreaking is trying to make the journey for a learner, we want that to feel really, really self-led, because it has to be. But the options that are out there for them, we actually start by doing almost through workforce intelligence, right? Almost by working directly with employers and regional data sources. We're trying to identify the jobs, the skills, the competencies, and the pathways that lead to those jobs. And it's why we started in one region in Charlotte to demonstrate how this can work, because a lot of these systems are more regional. But that kind of, how do we create pathways based on where there's a job at the end of those pathways, I think is what we've tried to introduce, a little bit of a paradigm shift there, because we saw in Germany and Switzerland, like we saw that it leads to low youth unemployment, really late competitive labor markets. And those kind of indicators, I think, are where we want to start to move the needle, especially for the populations that those metrics or indicators are the most far off.
That's a really helpful reframe, Stefan. Sometimes innovation is simply applying a solution to a new context. So it's great to hear how you're bringing some learnings from other countries, our global competitors, back to the US. Okay, the next question, I'm actually just going to focus on Tingting and Aaron, because Pete and Stefan are going to talk about their working relationship. So Tingting and Aaron, I'd love to hear about any stories you're able to share of connecting learners to meaningful employment opportunities and how employer partnerships may have helped you get there as well. So Tingting, if you'd like to start.
Sure. Yes. So this is, again, like as mentioned, just a start of our project. And we do just had a conference last weekend. The conference, we have, CS students who are not, you know, exactly grade 13 or 14, but they are neurodivergent. They're interested in IT career, and we connected with them with companies like Microsoft, SAP, and among others. So what we actually found was that the employers, the companies were impressed by the technical strengths and creativity of the students through their project demonstrations and presentations. And people are talking about internships, creating, you know, internship programs for the students. So we expect that next year we're going to have the conference again, and we're going to expand it to different age groups, not only CS students, but also, you know, the students after they graduate from high school, they don't have a CS major to, you know, declare, but we want to, again, connect them with different employers. So it's on the way. Stay tuned. We're going to have more, you know, success stories next year for students grade 13 and 14.
That's a great early one. Thanks for sharing. Aaron, anything on that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, Stefan used the expression win-win or win-win-win. We would call these relationships mutually beneficial, right? And so we, in some ways, we just operate like a residential construction company that has training programs and so on that make us not profitable. But, you know, our subcontractors, our vendors, the people that we just have regular business relationships with, they all know who we are and they all identify with our mission in some way. So where we might not be a top priority because we build one, maybe two houses a year for a given sub or vendor, it's a little, you know, we have some investment and buy-in through those regular day-to-day business relationships. Our other like sort of, let's say like philanthropic based or other mutually beneficial types of relationships in the sector oftentimes come from commercial general construction companies, right? So one example of this is a local kind of regional GC called Ryan Goody General Contractors, RGGC. And they're one of our leading industry partners at Uncommon Construction. So we ask them and other industry partners to do three of five things. One is donate, obviously. We're a nonprofit and we benefit from support. The second is to employ or create opportunities for employment, participate in our pathways, work and hiring fairs for our young people. The third is to build, spend full day building alongside some of our apprentice under their leadership, kind of in our space. So not, you know, to do a partner build day. And then the next two are a little bit lighter. So it's engage in one of our after school sessions or host us for a field trip, what our industry would call like a Gemba walk to go and see job sites in action. And then the last one being to mentor, which sounds like more than it is. It's just coming out and having lunch with a young person for 30 minutes. There is a wealth of knowledge and experience in our industry, and we lack opportunities to share it. So if you take one example of those five things of coming out for a partner build day, that actually becomes an extended job interview for some of our kids. So we've got young people who work alongside the HR manager, the COO or whatever, who then comes to us and says, hey, when is so-and-so going to graduate? We want to make sure that they're talking to us. And now these companies are elbowing each other out for the limited number of youth that were graduating into the industry. So our young people become those entry-level employees that you're really eager to invest in and you want to retain. So a specific example of that is a young person named Josh who completed two semesters with us, had that experience with Ryan Goody General Contractors. They met him in the morning and wanted to offer him a job in the afternoon. He wasn't quite ready to graduate high school, so we told him they had to wait. But then he had a job. So he graduated high school on a Friday and he had a job he could start the next week. He's still employed with them 2 or 3 years later. He's received a couple promotions. They're supporting him working part-time as he also goes to school to study residential general construction, try and get his contractor's license doing that. And he's even started his own business that we at Uncommon Construction can now hire him as a subcontractor. So Josh is actually out on our job site today hauling debris in his trailer because we don't have room for a dumpster on our job site. So we're able to create this virtuous cycle of mutual benefit between our young people, our subcontractor partners, our industry partners, and our staff. Like our construction manager loves that he can just call one of our alumni and within a couple of days he's hauling this trash away, right? So we have these really strong business relationships and they're all integrated. So it's that idea of like showing up, collaborating, like we were talking about before, and making it that win-win-win mutually beneficial virtuous cycle that sort of like continues its own evolution as it builds on itself. So that's one way that we see it play out in the most meaningful way, I think, in our program.
Thanks for putting a name to the process. I'm going to remember Josh for a long time. Congratulations to him. That's great news. Stefan and Pete, I'd love to move into your relationship between kind of these business community and employer partners alongside Radius, Stefan. So between the two of you, could you answer this question? How do you view the role of an employer in bridging the gap between education and career? Pete, I think we'll go to you first because you're a patient in the last section and then we'll go to
Stefan. Oh, all right. I was going to kick it over to Stefan first. So it kind of goes back to a little bit sort of a personal kind of experience at NASCAR. We've had a really successful internship, college internship program and for I think 22 years. I think it was started in 2001. And today the program, and it's not just these internships are for the entire industry. So they may work for one of our broadcast partners or race teams or sponsors, but certainly many of them, we've got a robust group at the various offices across the country of NASCAR offices. And throughout that, we've got many of those graduates that are you know, thriving on the team and advancing and growing and all that. But through so many of these kind of personal interactions and relationships, I heard so many times like, gosh, I just felt like I kind of almost like stumbled on this NASCAR, you know, internship program. And I just didn't see myself or didn't like, wasn't exposed to NASCAR and the different sort of careers that might intersect. And I love it. So for, you know, I was kind of scratching my head and I'm like, you know, of course, great. We've got other, you know, partners and programs for college students, but I'm like, we need to like start and inspire and engage like earlier on. And create this kind of connection of learning and sort of career inspiration and opportunity and creating that opportunity. And that's when we met Stefan and the team and really at the early stages of their kind of business and partnership with the Mecklenburg School District. And it was exactly kind of what I had envisioned was like, let's start this, you know, inspiration and support and nurturing kind of earlier on in the process. So that's sort of the genesis of it. And I think it just kind of continues to kind of grow and evolve and blossom from there. So over to you, Stefan.
It's really cool to hear you say it, Pete, because I don't often get to hear you speak from your perspective of where it came from NASCAR. We're usually figuring something out or the other, right? It's really cool to hear you say it because, you know, we have absolutely loved working with NASCAR, loved working with Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. And I think we really can't speak enough about the NASCAR team and how across the team it showed up. But I think what's really cool about hearing Pete say it is, like, from your head to like to where we've gone, right? Is I think a powerful story. And there are student stories and teacher stories that are floating around in my head. But to keep it more pointed, right? I think when I hear you talk about that idea, where we went from there is we supported the Mayor's Youth Employment Program in Charlotte, offering virtual work experiences. The school district got really excited about how this could reach more students. And, you know, we play with the phrase democratize access to career connected learning, right? And that's one of those perks of technology, where technology can support the people systems that are already there. And now I think this semester we're with NASCAR's experience, which showcases a couple of leading jobs around marketing, you know, from search engine marketing to content marketing to marketing strategist. We're showcasing these different jobs and we're reaching almost the numbers are, you know, we're still in the middle of the school year, but this semester we've got over 200 enrolled and that's growing. And so from idea to connecting more than like in this school year, we should very conservatively reach 400 students with these kinds of career connected learning or this job exposure. So to just see how that can snowball from someone on the business side saying, hey, we want to support something and figure out how we can be a great member of the community and a great partner to a really tangible impact that's moving the needle for the school district on how many students are prepared to enter their career, aware of careers out there in marketing and are taking on some kind of work, you know, virtual work experience and getting some kind of industry credential or completion, that arc, right, over the last year and a half is fun to reflect on. And I think it's really indicative of what can happen when employers plug in. Liz, I hope I answered the question there, but it was fun hearing Pete talk about how it's worked. And we did some work in Raleigh, North Carolina. So to see how it can snowball when you're onto something into multiple regions, into multiple kind of usage cases, from the Mayor's Youth Employment Program to CTE, career technical education courses at the school district, that willingness and desire to show up, right? A lot can come from it when you find the right partners to work on it with. So appreciate that, Pete.
Thanks, Stefan. I want to ask Pete just one more from your vantage point at NASCAR. Can you dive a little bit deeper into how you see the role of education? Stefan kind of touched on those that are actually enrolled in the programs he's overseeing, but what about education is helping prepare folks for not only jobs at NASCAR, but jobs in NASCAR's community? What are the skills they need to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, so part of that, Liz, is we try to use our sport as much as possible to make learning fun and engaging. So we've got, you know, although at earlier ages, more kind of junior high, we've got a very robust kind of STEM curriculum in partnership with the National Science Teachers Association. So racing is the most purest form of competition, and we're just trying to make it kind of inspirational for students to learn about things like science, technology, engineering, and math. But also, I think we want to use almost like the sport as a bit of like a case study or platform to just help students, and this is probably more in the high school age or grades, is to really kind of expose them to the different paths that they can take, right? College, a four-year college isn't necessarily the right fit or maybe the most feasible, but that shouldn't hold you back from a really incredible and successful career. So I think just looking at whether college is an opportunity and that makes sense, or, you know, maybe just going directly into the workforce and careers and, you know, around that, if it's a, you know, technical, you know, college or degree that you're looking for. So I think it's just using our sport or industry as a little bit of like a case to be like, you know, these are the potential paths. And we just want to, you know, create a real world kind of example that's sort of relatable to help students.
That's really helpful. And I want to make sure we include Tintin and Aaron in this as well. We've talked about the Catalyze Challenge. What have been your experiences working on career-connected learning programs as part of the Catalyze Challenge? Aaron, do you want to start there?
Yeah, so we're a new grantee of the Catalyze Challenge. And these, what I think I would call like impact investments for philanthropy to scale this work, especially with a lens towards career-connected learning, are becoming more and more common. I think Stefan kind of pointed to it earlier in the conversation as well. you know, we can find something that's working, or even just in as investments in research and development for new methods and models. You know, the Catalyze Challenge represents a really, really awesome opportunity, you know, for us at Uncommon Construction, as well as I'm sure the other organizations, to, you know, stay true to our North Star understanding of the problems and our mission with some guaranteed secure funding as like pre-revenue, pre-other revenue investments in standing up new programs that will enhance the quality of what we're already doing, as well as expand and differentiate the programs that we already know have the ability to change the game. In addition to just creating a different and newer and bigger platform on which we can have this conversation more broadly with a more diverse range of stakeholders. So I know we're super grateful to the Catalyze Challenge to have been seen from all the applicants, and to be among, you know, all these other awardees who are doing such important work across different sectors to create, you know, new opportunities for career-connected learning, and to be part of that conversation. So, you know, opportunities like the Catalyze Challenge or other investments like it, whether they come from individuals or collaborative efforts like this, are really critical to advancing this work.
And Ting-Ting, you mentioned a conference and some corporate employers at that conference. How has Catalyze Challenge been part of that process for you?
Yes, thank you very much for giving me another chance to thank Catalyze Challenge, because we do use part of the Catalyze Challenge Ignite grant to support the conference, or, you know, fund the conference. And the conference is called Inclusive Coding Festival. It's definitely, you know, along with our mission of the nonprofit, and also along with the career connected learning that Catalyze Challenge is supporting us to do. And like Erin mentioned, it allows us to do research on, you know, whether this particular design of curriculum really works for students with neurodivergent conditions, and also gives incentives for the employers to talk to us and give us input on the education curriculum design and so on. So, which is traditionally not available through other grants opportunities, as far as I know. So thank you very much. It's a really great support and it's really needed. Thank you.
Thanks, Ting-Ting. I just want to make sure we give Pete, if there's anything else from the employer perspective you wanted to share that we haven't been able to touch on, we can do it now. Otherwise, I'm going to go into some of our business leader questions.
I transition to the business leader questions.
Perfect. That sounds good. Thanks, Pete. Okay. So we had three questions submitted. I would love to try to address all three in the time we have left. The first is from Pennsylvania, from Laura Bartlett. And Laura asks, what is the best way to educate those who are in lesser paying jobs and those whose jobs may have been eliminated? I think Erin might want to talk about that first, given the industry you're in and how you framed your work at the beginning, Erin.
I'd say the most essential industry in our region is carpentry construction, as it relates to coastal restoration, infrastructure development, living sustainably on the coast. But the most popular jobs, particularly of populations who are historically marginalized or excluded, are in the service industry and tourism sectors. And there's not a lot of growth opportunities, you know, from the ground up in those sectors. So when we think about educating those who are in lesser paying jobs, if I'm understanding the question, you know, first of all, our approach is that we're oftentimes your first job. And so the way that we engage with our participants is that we are starting you in your work life with an expectation that you have potential, that you should be earning more, and that your skill and labor and effort has value. We live in the American South, where labor has been valued, but mostly been exploited for hundreds of years. And we see it in almost every aspect of the built environment in our lives. So we start from a place where our young people don't work for free. The skill, the experience, the work that they're providing has value. Every one of our young people earns above minimum wage. In New Orleans, we pay $10 or more an hour. Every semester you come back, you get an extra dollar per hour as a recognition of your increased skill and ability, right? And the value that you add to the work. Not only that, if you meet our attendance requirement of 80%, 85% or more, you're now vested in your equity award, scholarship. So not only are we paying you what we believe is a more equitable wage for your first job, but we are also applying an equity award that is derived from your earned equity or ownership in the projects that you build together. So it's a mechanism that we have for profit sharing with our young people as well. You're building, so we're using this industry, this sector, the system that has been exclusive, both for the employees that make it up, as well as who has access to the end product of what's built, as we think about redlining and housing and so on. And we are using that through one lens as a form of redistribution, but through this active participation process, right? So in New Orleans, our young people are getting 10 bucks an hour. If you make your equity award, it becomes 15. We just started our expansion to another city in Minneapolis, Minnesota, sort of separate from this investment from the Catalyze Challenge. And the minimum wage in Minneapolis is like 13 something. So that's what they make there, right? And then again, if you make the attendance requirement, we're matching 50 cents on the dollar. And so this is, you know, we believe that, you know, along with the centuries of historic exploitation that I mentioned, we also believe that there are some inequitable hiring practices in our industry where the cost burden and risk is shifted to the employees. So you have a lot of people who are 1099, who aren't covered by workers' comp or whatever. So we also do that, right? Our young people are W-2 employees, cost burden of employment is on us. So we're starting from the beginning with our young people on the expectation that this is what they should expect from their experience in work and life, from their employers, and trying to be a model for that to the degree that it's possible for us, right? So I want to make sure I sort of understood the question, was able to like speak to that. But, you know, we're, like I said, we're not necessarily engaging with people when they're career switching. We're sort of like reintroducing a different type of start than some young people might more readily have access to, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And it was a helpful reframe because a lot of what we're talking about is K through 12, which is exactly what you're saying, Erin. We're starting from the beginning. So thank you for that thoughtful answer. We're going to go to our next question, which is from Gary Daughters in Atlanta, Georgia. Gary asks, do we need more training or less training in soft skills? Should teaching soft skills be a strategic priority? Is there a way to even measure results there? So I'm just going to open it up for anyone who'd like to chime in on that.
I'll jump in first on that if y'all don't mind, and I'll try and be brief because I want to hear what you guys do. But I mentioned earlier that we have dispensed with credentials and we hang our hard hat, so to speak, on soft skills. All the research from workforce investment boards to every other organization that we could find says that for young people starting their careers, it's soft skills. And it used to be that college wasn't necessarily used, and maybe it still is, college wasn't necessarily used for your degree that you received, unless it was something very specific like computer science or biology or chemistry, but that it was actually serving as a proxy for soft skills, right? If you have independence and all these other things. So right when we were learning about this, that soft skills are what are central, we were like, well, great. Well, how do you measure that, right? Like, how do you measure the things that people are talking about, like reliability and curiosity and teamwork and so on? It turns out there's also a lot of research about that. So at Uncommon Construction, we have adopted a third-party research-based framework called MHA Labs. So every month with their paycheck, our apprentices receive what's called a hireability scorecard. We've been recognized by MHA Labs as, you know, a national innovator in the way that we utilize their framework. So we'd love to chat with anybody more about how we do that or how we've sort of leveled up what it was initially created for. But our young people are receiving a performance evaluation called a hireability scorecard, where they've identified through research across industries these 12 soft skills that are observable, demonstrable in a lot of different environments. And it's things like actively looking for more work when you're done, graciously accepting feedback, all these kinds of things, right? This then aligns with a badging system that we have, so it's visibly represented on our job site. You get stickers for your hard hats and all that stuff. So we're able to inject our culture in that as well. Would love to hear how other people are doing it. It was fortuitous that we got introduced to MHA Labs in that way and at that time. I couldn't agree more that it's doubling down on soft skills is where so much of the research points to. And there are resources out there to measure it. We happen to have landed on these hireability scorecards.
I concur with doubling down on soft skill training. And I just think, you know, real briefly here, that is where, you know, true committed mentorship can make a ton of difference. But I totally agree with Aaron that it's really, really valuable training and part of the journey.
I'll echo Pete and Aaron, and I'm actually going to turn it over to Ting Ting because I think she'll have a really cool perspective on this. You know, we can only highly like lift up programs that are training programs and training providers or training environments like a school, right? Or like a classroom where you're fostering soft skills, because like Aaron said, and like Pete said, it's what we need from folks entering the job market. It's what employers are looking for. And it's correlated with mental health too, right? I mean, it's something where it's about a sense of belonging in society and fostering soft skills, I think better for the labor market, better for the individuals. And I think that's pretty much it.
Thank you, Aaron. I'll dig into the measurements framework you mentioned. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you all so much. I think that's all the time we have for today. So I really appreciate your thoughtful questions, but more importantly, I really appreciate the real work you're doing on the ground, and I'm going to take away some of those stories you shared, and hopefully we'll hear even more from you as some of the programs get launched and scale in the future. So what I heard is business can be at the table, business should be at the table, and you all are developing programs and models that can be replicated, that can be collaborated with. And there are plenty of resources, I'm sure, to follow up with to make sure that everyone has the benefit of your expertise and understanding of not only your communities, but how business can help provide some of the solutions that we've been talking through. So thank you again for your perspective on the role of business in K-12 education and career-corrected learning. I think with that, I'll wrap up. So thank you for joining us. Again, thank you to the Walton Family Foundation and our Catalyze Challenge grantees, Aaron Ting Ting Stefan, and Pete from NASCAR for joining us. We look forward to working with you all again soon. Have a great day.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, produced and engineered by Alexi Lippman and Alex Pastanin. Thanks for listening. See you next time.